And we have Joseph.
Hey there.
Hi. Jamie and Joseph are both undergraduates at the University of Aberdeen, and they're going to be taking part in the Pekka Kucha night as part of Explorathon, where they will be presenting 20 images, and they've got 20 seconds to talk about each one. But I'm going to hand it over to them now, so if you could tell us a little bit more about yourself and why you've come on the show today.
Hi, I'm Jamie, at the University of Aberdeen in my final year. We're kind of coming on here just because we're doing an iGEM competition, which is sort of synthetic biology, and we're part of our competition sort of guidelines are to have public outreach, and so one of the ways in which we're sort of trying to spread a message about synthetic biology is things like this.
Hi everyone, I'm the same as Jamie in that I'm my final year of university, but I'm studying microbiology. The iGEM project is short for genetically engineered machines. So our goal within the project was to design some form of gene-based machinery that could be used in the future by further teams and also the public. Other than that, I feel like I spend most of my life in the university these days, but contrary to popular belief about scientists, I do get out sometimes.
That sounds good. So yeah, the iGEM competition is a really exciting and interesting competition. So I believe it started out in the US, so it came out of MIT, and it's open. Is it open for anyone in the world to apply to, or is it?
Open for, they have skills competition and the university, well, mm-hmm. Schools level and university level, and it's always been regional, so it's the kind of the European regionals and the North American regionals, but this is the first year in which they've had teams from all over the world converge and all go to MIT, so it's about 3,000 or so people going to this huge jamboree at MIT at the end of October.
Brilliant, sounds really exciting.
Yeah, in addition to the schools and universities, the iGEM is open to some groups such as museums as well. So although I don't think they'll actually be at our jamboree in November, there is still the option for other groups to take part.
Good. I love that it's called a jamboree as well. It
sounds like a big party.
Yeah, it sounds like, I'm sure it will be. Should be great. So why did you guys choose to get involved with this competition?
I think it's sort of, I don't know about Joe, but for me it's, I'm still sort of at a loose end as to what I'm going to do when I actually get my degree. And so last summer I did a sort of placement in pharmaceutical industry, and so this year I thought I'd do something different, sort of find out what I'm interested in, really.
For me, it was my student supervisor, Ian Stansfield, had mentioned it and asked if I wanted to take part. And I'd been considering it, and then I had the realisation that although it's a bit of a high goal, so like we had the potential, the resources, the money, the equipment that we need to essentially cure a disease if we really put our mind to things. That was kind of what fired my imagination for it and drove me to take part.
Yeah, so it's so much more than just the competition itself. It's kind of looking at the bigger picture as well. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing on Friday at Explorathon? Now, bearing in mind you've only got 6 minutes and 40 seconds on Friday night to talk about what you're doing, so...
Yeah, last night we had a long, long rehearsal. We were in the IMS until about, it was almost 11 at night last night, just doing rehearsals kind of again and again, going through the 20 slides. Because 20 seconds, you've got a lot of information in every slide, and 20 seconds goes by very fast.
Yeah, I thought 20 seconds, it'll be easy to get the information on the slides, and then after the first one where I ran on for probably about a half a minute, 40 seconds, and still wasn't finished, I thought, okay, yeah, maybe that's a bit more difficult. So it gives us a lot of experience of doing presentations and planning them a lot better, which I don't think I've really done in the past before.
Yeah, it's a very challenging way to present, as in the Pekka Kucha style. People think because it is a short presentation that it's easier to plan, and I think it's harder because it is shorter. Can you give the listeners any kind of insight into what you'll kind of be talking about in your presentation?
It's sort of a really fast run through of the problem we're trying to solve, which is African sleeping sickness, which is a pretty major disease in Central Africa, sort of the way we weren't trying to cure it, but what we were trying to do is develop a sort of detection assay to try and get early detection, because the earlier you detect it, the more kind of good the outset for cure is.
So what we are going to be discussing with that is how we can use a lab-modified E. coli to detect the disease in situations where it would be difficult to with normal diagnosis tools.
Okay, so everyone can hear more about that on Friday. So that's from 5:15 in the Belmont Film House, and the event is free, and you'll hear from a number of speakers at the PECA Coochie Night. So just going back now to your kind of undergraduate degrees, can I ask you a little bit more about why you chose to study what you're both studying?
Well, I actually started my degree doing just straight biology because I sort of didn't really have much of a clue as to what I was going to end up doing, so I just took a very general thing. And then I sort of had a few modules in medical sciences and I switched into immunology. It's a really interesting field. I like it quite a lot.
For me, it's a lot more personal. Some of the listeners might remember the E. coli outbreak at Macduff Primary School quite a few years ago now. That actually was my class, and I remember being there and thinking, I want to be able to do something to help people and maybe find a treatment for something, and a few other situations like that in life. Seeing people whose families were affected by cancer, again, that kind of drove me to do that, which is why I'm studying what I am doing now.
Wow, really powerful reasons for your degree choice. So, have you got any advice for people that might want to go on and study what you're studying? About getting starting university or being at university?
just, I don't know, go to all the lectures. That's probably a good start.
Yeah, I would say try and keep on top of stress, because that's been a big one for me in the past year. Just get out and do things.
Yeah, get outside rather than sitting by a computer or in the lab. So we're talking about, I think actually, we're probably going to go to a quick song and then we'll come back to the interview and we'll speak a little bit more about synthetic biology and also some other questions just about you guys. So I think we're going to a song now. Talking Science on Shmoo FM, and we have got an interview today with Jamie and Joseph, who are taking part in the iGEM competition, and we were just talking a little bit about that. So iGEM is really based within synthetic biology, so we wanted to ask about what you thought about the field of synthetic biology and what do you think the biggest developments might be in this area over the next, 5 to 10 years or so?
Synthetic biology is really, really interesting. It sort of allows you to create not your own life, but sort of to rearrange what already exists. And I think probably the biggest development for the future is going to be what's known as gene synthesis, whereby rather than going in nature and or sticking lots and lots of different bits together, which takes a lot of time, you just sort of print it out. It's sort of the difference between making a picture out of snippets of lots of other pictures and just printing out one from a printer in one go. It's much faster. It's quite expensive right now, which is why we didn't use it for our project, but it's if the price comes down over the next, 5, maybe 10 years, then it'll probably replace all the techniques we used in the lab for our project, to be honest.
For me, I would say the biggest development wouldn't be so much in the lab as sort of what we're doing now, actually, is public outreach and helping people to understand what is going on within the labs. A lot of the problems that scientists face are sort of like backlash from the public because of various things. You'll quite often hear of, say, groups of people maybe destroying crops that have been genetically modified, things like that. Quite often under pretext that the genetic engineering is random and dangerous. However, scientists will understand that we can direct the gene mutations almost down to the level of atoms. And so, like, the researchers are usually fairly confident that it is safe. However, trying to explain the complex biology to the public is something that is extremely difficult. So I think the next 5 years, the biggest developments might actually be in public outreach rather than in the lab.
Yeah, that's really, yeah, definitely. And there's events like Explorathon, which are taking place on Friday, when people can explore lots of different areas of research that are taking place here in Aberdeen, a lot of which have really kind of global implications. And there's events like the Café Scientifique that we often talk about here on Talking Science. So there was also a series earlier in the year called Café Controversial, where there was a speaker on that very topic about genetically modified crops. And it was a really interesting talk and discussion, very open, where people were sharing their views on genetically modified crops. So that was really good. So, moving on to the question that we ask everyone, that everyone dreads. So, we want to ask you, which decade would you have most liked to have lived in, if you could pick any decade?
Can I go first this one?
Oh, yeah. To be honest, I find that quite a hard question. I'm a bit old-fashioned, so probably somewhere like 100 or so years ago. But at the same time, I'm really curious about things that will happen in the future, scientific advances. So I'd probably say 100 years either direction.
I think, as a scientist, I'm sort of obligated to say I'd like to live in the present, because in the past, you sort of know what's about to be discovered, and so it's not very interesting. So if you're living in the current, in the present, it's everything in the future sort of a mystery, and that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah, definitely. We've had a variety of answers to that question. We've had the past, the future, the 80s, the... no one said the 90s yet, have they?
We had the 1790s,
yeah.
So I don't think we've had the 1990s
No,
yet.
No one said the 1990s. Maybe no one wants, I don't know. I'm not saying anything about the 90s. So thanks very much for coming on Talking Science and speaking to us today. I hope some of the listeners go down to see you talk at the Pekakucha on Friday as part of Explorathon. I think in the show we're going to be doing some DIY science, and we've got our Sound of Science.